All lines are now bridged.
All right, thank you very much. Hello everyone, welcome, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. My name is Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and I'm the designated federal officer of the HITACH and this task force. Many of you I see are returning members, and on behalf of ONC, I would like to thank each of you for your time. I especially want to thank Arian Malik and David McCauley for serving as co-chairs for the task force. We're really very pleased and fortunate to have them lead the charge. Just for everyone's information, all of these task force meetings will be held publicly, and members of the public are welcome to share their comments and feedback through the chat feature, or they can also do so during the formal public comment portion of our meeting, which will be held about 3:25 p.m. Eastern Time, which is about 5 minutes before I close out the meeting. Also, I'll be taking roll call at the top of each of these calls, so when I call your name, if you could please indicate your presence. Let's start with our co-chairs, Arian Malik.
Hello.
David McCauley.
Present.
Ricky Bloomfield. Cynthia Fisher. Valerie Gray. Jim Gerges.
Present, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Edward June.
Present.
Ken Kawamoto indicated he's going to be out today, but he should be joining us next week. Victor Lee. Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Jack Poe. Raj Watwani. Ram Sharam.
Present.
Sasha Termott. Andy Truscott.
Present.
And Scott Weingarten.
We got a couple of people who are having audio issues. So Victor Lee and Jack Poe are both saying, and Raj are all saying that they're having trouble connecting to audio.
Okay. We will capture them as we go along then. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. And if folks, as they join, if they can hear me and they can connect to audio, just tag in the chat, and we'll make sure to acknowledge your presence.
All right. Thank you, Arian. All right. Thank you all. I would like to now turn it over to Arian and David for their opening remarks.
Howdy. We're excited. I think we're super pleased to kick off another round of the ISP task force. We're going to go over our charter in just a bit, so we won't belabor it. But I think the work that we're doing here sets the foundation for the next generation of the U.S. healthcare system and standards interoperability relating to national priorities. So I think we're excited to be able to put some useful advice in front of the national coordinator and help set the agenda for where the nation goes in the future. David?
Thanks, Arian, and hello, colleagues and former friends and new friends. I wouldn't have guessed that it was the ISP task force that would drag me out of retirement, but here I am, and I'm looking forward to how we can make a contribution.
All right. I'm going to cover the first administrative bit, cover the sort of history of the last ISP task force, since I've got the shared history, and then we're going to turn it over to David to lead us through a discussion of potential priorities for the ISP task force to take on. I think we're going to take an approach of going broad first and then narrowing, understanding that we can't take on every possible charge. So we're going to intentionally go wide first and then narrow in second. If we go to the next slide. Here is the membership. I think we're really pleased that we've got a good group of members, both from the HITACH and from the general HIT community, and also that we've got representatives who represent payers, providers large and small, consumer organizations. We're really representing and patient advocates. We're really representing the broad swath of the U.S. Healthcare system, both the people who are in many cases data holders, as well as people who desperately need access to data. If we're probably underrepresented, it's pretty obviously in public health, but I suspect we're going to get into the public health weeds and pull in folks on the public health side. So I think we've got a great group, and we'll spare each other from going around the room and doing introductions. I think most of us have worked together in the past, and we're going to be able to work together very comfortably in the future. Let's go on to the next slide. So, you know, where does the ISP Task Force come from? This is actually enshrined in the Cures Act. The notion that the national coordinator shall convene the HIV Advisory Committee to identify priority uses of health information technology and then associated standards and implementation specifications, publish a report and make appropriate recommendations, that HISAC in association with NIST will annually review priorities for health information technology standards and implementation specifications. So at least one answer for why we're all here together is that Congress told us to be, and, you know, we got to produce a report. I think a lot of us are in this for the interests of the nation, and, you know, just producing a report to check a checkbox would not be a terribly satisfying thing to do. So, you know, the real reason that we're here is that standards and technology evolution for the U.S. healthcare system is a journey, and we identify unmet needs and then need to continually fill the pipeline of projects for ONC stakeholders, industry to work on in order to address the end stage of where the U.S. healthcare system is going. And if we do our job well, we kind of help digest a lot of potential things that ONC and other stakeholders could work on and get to a narrower set that is easier to action. I'd also point out that the list of things that ONC and the U.S. healthcare system could take on is potentially infinite. And so a useful thing that we can do is, you know, is in our name, prioritize. We can prioritize and also think about the time frame of standard interoperability evolution so that we're thoughtful about dependencies, path dependencies, and timeframe dependencies and are setting an appropriate and thoughtful roadmap or helping the ONC set an appropriate thoughtful roadmap in our recommendations. So I'm just going to pause there and see if there's any questions on the reason that we're all here. Otherwise, we'll go to the charter. Why don't we do that? Let's go to the charter. Oh, sorry. Next, that is our charter.
It's the next.
So I think
no, actually, Arian, there is one more slide.
Yeah.
Go one slide forward.
There we go. Thank you. So, you know, our charter narrowly constituted is identify opportunities to update interoperability needs within the ISA section. So if we think about the ISA as a really well-organized list of standard interoperability components for the nation. Part of the way to frame our charter is to say, okay, great, what items in the ISA are missing or have additional needs in order to advance standard interoperability for the nation? I think maybe thinking at our mission a little more broadly, we should feel free to publish additional recommendations that may not fit this particular narrow charter, but we need to make sure that we address this narrow charter of additional and modified interoperability needs for consideration updates to the ISA, including related standards and implementation specifications. Okay, now we go one back.
Arian?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just a couple of comments on the previous slide, if we can go back. I struggle sometimes reading bureaucratic language, and I have to parse it into chunks that make sense to me. But I see, you know, kind of two somewhat different goals here. You know, adding new standards or updating existing standards that are already in a priority use case that's documented in the ISA is one thing we can do, but we can put new things into the ISA in terms of these interoperability needs. So if there's a category that doesn't cover something that we think is important, we have the right, or the, you know, that's our charter to identify those priority needs, not just to add standards to existing categories. I think about those two quite differently, and I think the skills maybe required to be knowledgeable are different as well. So I just want to make that point.
Arian,
yours.
Gotcha. Okay. So if we go up, let's just do a little history review. So the last time this band of superheroes met, we identified a set of focus areas in 2019, and then we lined up a set of future focus areas. I'm going to note that something very obvious happened in 2020 that means that the future focus areas that we outlined may be in need of some revision, and that's going to be a tee up for David to lead us through the next section. But just as a reminder for the group, particularly for those who were either part of the group and had forgotten what happened 2 years ago because of the intervening year, or people who were new to the group and are interested in what the group worked on. So we identified a big focus on orders and results. We actually went really deep on orders and results and followed the workflow from order to result all the way through back and forth, and you know, followed that pathway, and then thought about standards and interoperability levers and policy levers associated with improving workflows for orders and results. Then we went on to closed loop referrals and care coordination, same kind of thing. What would it take to transfer information from primary care to specialty or proceduralist and get back the report. And then we also did a deep dive in medication and pharmacy data, really from the perspective of how do we get a complete summary of medications taken and medications dispensed relative to assembling a complete medication list. And then we also thought about cross-domain activities associated with code sets, terminology, and other kinds of foundational activities that we would take on. And then we thought that in the future, we would take on chronic care management, SDOH, and cost transparency as future areas. And I think if we look at those areas, they're pretty high priority areas. But, you know, we also note that in the intervening time, we had a pandemic, and we noted the areas that are system, our U.S. healthcare system, worked and didn't work from the perspective of data flows and interoperability to respond to a public health crisis. And I think that also exposes some larger scale interoperability needs that are independent of public health. So there's an obvious set of future focus areas addressed in, you know, first of all, just closing out the journey that we've had relative to public health and COVID, but also to look at that as a good learning experience for what kind of system we need to build towards in the medium term and future to assure that we don't have the same kinds of issues. I'm going to pause and see if there's questions on the previous work of the ISP before I turn it over to David to lead us through a discussion on future ISP activities.
Got my hand up.
Oh, sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering how you were going to handle it. I mean, hey. Just a quickie. It'll be very easy for us to say, hell, we've had a global pandemic. We need to go and do something really specific over COVID testing, etc. I would urge that we have a little bit of caution on doing too hard a knee-jerk, although it has been a year, and actually look at how we could finesse orders and results and maybe do specific use cases in there around both active infection and antigen type testing and just explain how that services it. The area, obviously, that's glaring in here that we didn't look at and haven't considered would be around immunization histories and immunization administrations. I think given the current climate, it would be an unsatisfactory overlook if we didn't look at that. What do you think?
No, yeah, agreed. And that's part of what David's going to lead us through. And by the way, I really like Andy.
Okay, so people.
I really like Andy, the notion that we should think about following the data through. So, you know, actually one of my takes was that when we looked at the work that we did in orders and results, if all that work had magically gotten done between 2019 and 2020, we'd be in a much better position with respect to be able to flow order information into labs with demographic and contact information, and from there to public health. And so it's worthwhile relooking at these areas from the lens of, you know, how did our system fare in response to a pandemic? But that's definitely part of the work that David's going to lead us through. And then I agree with you also that we shouldn't over-rotate and over-fixate, but we really should be, you know, I guess the lens that I'm advocating is let's look at the experience of the past year as exposing some gaping holes in the U.S. healthcare system as a system, and acknowledge that there's some work to be done there. You know, other examples in that light are things like the work the U.K. did in the recovery trial that the U.S. Was, I think, objectively not as advanced in being able to use and marshal the data that we have flowing in order to inform real-world evidence and sort of emergent evidence trials. If other folks want to raise their hand, otherwise we'll turn it over to David to facilitate through a discussion on future priority areas for the task force.
Thanks, Arian. And Andy, your suggestion is exactly what we're going to dive into here over the rest of, most of the rest of our time together this afternoon. I don't have a predefined a plan for exactly how to coordinate the conversation when we're at this sort of highly zoomed out level. But I think the process might go something like this, is that in today's session and perhaps in our next session, we surface some broad ideas without maybe a lot of detail other than the detail of why you think it's an important idea for us to consider. And we'll try to build a list of the ideas that resonate with the group, and then maybe prioritize amongst those before we dive in to get into the details of the sort of the best ideas, or into the categories that we may choose near term and long term. We might break it up in different ways, but I would look at today's session as a harvesting of ideas, not to go deep but to go broad. We may come up with some things that we review with our other colleagues at ONC, and they say, you know, well covered, we can have you guys skip that one. We may come up with things that we'd never thought about. So let's open it up to that discussion. Just for the sake of maybe keeping us from bouncing way all over the map, maybe we could start with things that are related to the 2020 experience. That doesn't mean we won't touch on non-COVID related, non-public health related topics later on, but just to avoid whiplash, maybe Andy, do you want to just take the lead and reiterate what you just said, and that would be our kind of kickoff for the discussion?
Hey, before we do this, can we just confirm? So I saw that Ricky said he's here. I saw Raj was trying to join, Jack was trying to join, and Victor was trying to join. Do we have audio from all these folks who were eagerly trying to join the conversation, just to make sure that we're actually taking their input?
Or is it just the three of us?
Yeah, or
this
three
is
of us talking.
This is Raj. I'm on.
Okay, Raj is on. Ricky, you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, hey, Ricky. Hey, Jack, are you on? Okay, I think Jack's still having issues. If people are trying to get on and having issues, again, please tag folks, and the Excel group will try to address through your audio issues. Sorry, David, back over to you.
And actually, this is Victor,
great.
And I am on.
good.
And
thanks, Victor. Sorry.
And I apologize. No, sorry, my dad. And I do need to drop in a few minutes. Would it be okay if I just shared a quick thought to answer that question around priority areas vis-a-vis COVID?
Yes, please, Victor. I'm glad you brought up your time limited. Go first, please.
Yeah, and apologies to the whole group. One of the things that I had an opportunity to work on, and it's still kind of in progress, so I, you know, there's still a lot of details that I don't understand, but there's, you know, this whole notion of understanding, you know, kind of early detection of, you know, novel infections. That could be, you know, of pandemic proportions, as well as just other notifiable conditions. And it's really the first time I've kind of jumped into this world. So there's probably a lot of the ecosystem that I don't understand, but there appears to be a lot of siloing of laboratory information. While there are meaningful use requirements for the ability to report labs, notifiable conditions to electronically report. It's my impression that there's kind of a disconnect between what's happening at local laboratories, healthcare delivery systems, you know, across providers within a delivery system, and how that information can be shared within those actors, as well as health information exchanges and state health departments, and also having that information seamlessly roll up to federal agencies, for example, CDC. And so what I've witnessed is kind of a fragmentation of the flow of that information and who has access and how easy it is to do ELR, electronic laboratory reporting. And then this has ties with ECR, electronic case reporting. So anyway, I just wanted to comment on that. That's just been my experience in working with a project with an HIE. And that's just the observation that I wanted to share. I think some of it may have to do with policy, but also I also noticed issues with current interoperability standards, variability in how you construct, for example, HL7B2 lab messages, both syntactically as well as semantically. So I know I've said a mouthful, but basically I kind of wished that everything would kind of seamlessly flow together, and it was just my observation that it doesn't. So I'll leave it at that.
So Victor, I would maybe suggest that there's a broad category here that you started with called syndromic surveillance, which is, you know, the ability to detect some of these things earlier, and that the specific gap in syndromic surveillance that you're identifying is low-level flows of information between systems that could contribute to better awareness, situational awareness for emerging syndromes. Is that a fair statement, or is that too narrow?
I think you beautifully summed it up.
And David, just editorially, and also just as the voice of the past ISP task force, one of the issues that we discovered when we looked at orders and results at the last ISP task force is that, not a surprise, all the standards we could ever need or want were already there and actually pretty well vetted and pretty well done with narrow guidelines. But because the electronic reporting CMS measure was topped out, it was removed as a CMS measure, and then it was dropped as a certification measure. And then there were no policy ties to do an orders standard in. And so even though we had all the standards we could possibly use, including link subsets, you know, the LRI and LRO orders and results standard that had been that had gone all the way through the HL7 process, embedded and validated, in some cases incorporated into EHRs, they weren't universally or even broadly adopted because we basically grandfathered everybody to have their own legacy lab reporting standards. And that's a little bit of the issue that Victor's kind of pointing out.
Yeah, one of the tricks that we adopted in the last incarnation of this group was, I think, Ken and Steve Lane. Stephen Lane managed a spreadsheet where we tried to categorize policy issues, policy lever arms, regulatory constraints and or opportunities for each of the priority use cases that we tried to surface. And I think that's going to probably be valuable to follow that model beforehand. So as Arianne just discussed there, there was a regulatory opportunity that got dropped that might or might not be something we'd want to surface back as saying, hey, this is an important lever arm for improving syndromic surveillance, et cetera. So we should try to keep track in our heads the difference between where's there a gap in the standards, where's there a gap in policy, where's there a gap in incentives, where's there a gap in regulatory pressures, et cetera.
Hey, David? Team Jim Durgis?
Yes. I don't know how the hand raising mechanism works. Why don't we just do a gentleman's agreement, or that's a bad way to say it these days. Why don't we just try to respect each other's airspace and speak up? Because I don't see the hand raising.
I can help you with I can help you with the hand raising. We've done the hand raising in the past. I think it's been really useful. And then we do need to facilitate people who can't use the hand raising because they're not connected to the thingy at the end.
Okay.
But I think if we can use the hand raising, I'll help you out.
Can I go ahead and make a
great
quick comment?
Appreciate it. Absolutely, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I want to strongly support what was just said about this because from our perch, you know, and our experience with, you know, 19 states, it wasn't that the standards were lacking. It was that the policies that would, for example, with public health departments have caused people to actually implement weren't in place. It was you were showing good faith that you were on your way towards having discussions towards building something, right? So we found is there were several states that had never actually done it. And so even though we were ready with the data, thank you, standards, the biggest barrier to actually reporting was the lack of progress in having ready interfaces. And, you know, the second thing, and so if there's some way to support going beyond that sort of light touch, maybe, you know, with preparedness of public health technologies and interfaces to receive it, I would advocate for that. The other was I was just curious about people's notion of, you know, it's sort of a many-to-many. So just because you have standards doesn't mean you don't have to go through contracting, data use agreements, surveys, and testing of each of these interfaces. And I'm curious if there's a better model, kind of headed where TEFCA's headed, to have some sort of one-way on-ramp, sort of intermediary that decomplicates the many-to-many. For example, we're in 19 states, 190 hospitals. Well, each we had to interact with every single public health department, and they had to interact with every hospital. And so is there an opportunity to use the HIEs, for example, so that providers are interacting with someone who has that skill set, and that skill set is interacting with the public health departments, creating more of a many-to-one with a highly capable person in the middle. We think that would have simplified things. And I don't know if those are appropriate for the scope of this committee, but those would be further comments and support.
I think at this stage of our discussion, anything is appropriate. We may get feedback or make mutual decision to exclude some if it feels too far off. But at the moment, that seems right exactly what we're looking for. And Jim, maybe not at this moment if you're not ready, but I would be curious to know when you tried to move data around and were unable to, what was the data that you wanted to be able to move? In other words, what's the low-level data?
I can tell you just briefly. What worked well was federal reporting of the White House task force, because it was clear, it was teletracking. Yeah, sometimes there wasn't enough notice, but it worked. What didn't work well is when we had to report to each state public health department all of the requirements around the vaccinations, and et cetera, and not just vaccinations. Many of the states wanted the same data that the federal government wanted. We were ready, willing, and able. They weren't ready, nor were they willing, nor were they able. They were willing. So I think that's where we ran into problems. And then there's this whole category of forget the vaccines and the stuff HHS wants that the states also want. Some states had an enormous amount of additional data elements that were never part of any standard. I'm ignoring that as a problem that would be hard for us to solve. Maybe USCDI would solve it one day. But I'm just saying on the stuff.
Jim, can you give some examples specifically of where, which states and which additional data elements in what context?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the states. I think like Florida was the one that proliferated its additional data elements way beyond what HHS wanted. I think there were states, I think Kentucky, Tennessee early on, I'm trying to remember if New Hampshire, I can get you the list. There were about five states, Texas was one of them, where they just couldn't do it. And so we were trying to figure out how to be compliant. We were faxing them PDFs, right, that they never used. So there were states.
Okay, but Jim, they couldn't do what?
Oh, I'm sorry. Some of the requirements were vaccination status of your employees, of patients, where you were submitting hospital utilization data was one of them. And then when we got into vaccinations, it was specifics around who was vaccinated, how many of your employees were vaccinated. Those are requirements to report to the public health department. Is that stuff?
Thank you.
I can actually add a little bit of color since I was also dealing with some of these issues. I think, you know, states like Connecticut actually also started asking for adverse events reporting, when and where they got first or second shots. Whether the family also got vaccinated. So there were a lot of other fields that got asked by the states and sometimes public health county level that got extremely confusing, and there were no standards on any of those.
Super helpful. Yeah. So there was overlap with VAERS, and I don't think VAERS has – does VAERS have electronic standards associated with it, or is it all paper-based or form-based?
VAERS, form-based.
I don't know.
VAERS is the vaccine, the FDA vaccine reporting system, adverse event reporting system. Vaccine adverse event reporting system is what VAERS literally stands for. That sounds like a in terms of identify. Are there actually standards for vaccine adverse event reporting?
Well, wouldn't that be AAR reporting with a use case around AARs from vaccines?
Right, exactly. So SAE reporting or AE reporting, but we've got the FDA split VAERS it'll come to me at some point. But we've actually got split medical device reporting, vaccine reporting, and drug reporting. I think we also have biological adverse event reporting that's split off from vaccine adverse event reporting.
Yeah, I would say that it's not just that. There are basically states who are trying to deal with equity issues, adverse event issues, long-term tracking issues. So, you know, social demographic issues were kind of asked, zip codes, who else in your family, what your job was, why you were currently qualifying, what your health status complications might be. So it ended up being a mix. And frankly, even in some states that were asking for it, some providers just decided to ignore most of the requests because they're like, I'm not collecting this data. Whereas some of the, as you guys know, some private contractors got hired to go get shots. They were going berserk and implementing their own systems and collecting a lot of data. So it got extremely confusing on both the state and the national level on a lot of vaccination data. And that's before we even get into the logistics, right? Because there are lots of people asking for who has what shots, how many giving, who's open for which category, like all that was complete chaos and continues to be quite chaotic.
Yeah, hey, just to clarify, it wasn't the lack of whether there's a standard available or not. It was more remedial. They had no interface built. and they were several, five of our states were, three of the five were months away from having a live interface because they had never gotten that far with public health reporting data. And that's what people, we were piggybacking. And so that's
why. Yeah, I totally agree. I think this was similar to previous conversations we've had. I think in some cases, there were no standards. In some cases, it was implementation. In other cases, many people didn't know about the fact that there are apps and things built. And the public, so I think in some cases, almost like public lack of knowledge, because in the states that I was advising, many of the states, frankly, just to your point, switch to PDF or switch to like just send us an Excel sheet, like give us some columns, give us some data, like we'll figure it out on the back end. And then a lot of them, I think, even more problematically, there was like probably 36 startups that started to fill this gap. All of them with their own internal systems and basically made up their own standards that they kind of pushed to the other people in the state. So there's actually quite a lot of confusion right now on what the quote unquote the standard is.
Yeah, just to repeat back what I'm hearing. So what I heard was there's a number of issues. In some cases, there are standards that are not implemented or there's no readiness to adopt standards. Standards would have been perfectly fine, but there was no readiness on the part of implementers, states in particular, to adopt the standards. Number two, there were cases where there were well-established standards, but then there were additional state requirements above and beyond the standards that made the standards unusable in practice, and that overlapped with issue number one. And number three is in areas, for example, like adverse event reporting and some of the other information that we were trying to collect, there were no applicable standards, or you're dealing with a system that was almost inherently paper-based, and the concept of electronic interchange was somewhat foreign. And clearly, all three of those are going to require slightly different policy responses, but I think it's useful to kind of bucket into, we saw a bunch of issues. Some of them were lack of standards adoption. Some of them were people not adopting the standards consistently. And some of them were, there just was no standard. And we exposed a gap of a complete lack of standard. David, I see Andy's got his hand up.
Andy, I'll cue you up. Just one last little comment on that. That, you know, it's obviously well known that the power to set public health policies devolves to the bottom levels, to the state and even county level, and the federal ability to do something about it federally is somewhat limited. But I would look maybe that our group could identify and clarify what are the ideal standards. I assume in many cases that's actually already clear, but we could endorse that clarity if we find it, knowing that we have some that ONC and its sibling agencies have some limits as to what they can do, but at least gaining clarity about the preferred way to do it could help in the long run. It's a frustrating public health policy is obviously frustrating, and then the funding deficits obviously well understood as well. Andy, go ahead. I think you were next.
Yeah, thanks. I think it will be a good piece of helpful input to the discussions going on if this task force were to just draw together and say, for these use cases, these are the standards that this task force would suggest are extant, usable, and this is how you should use them. Because, elsewhere right now, there is legislation being drafted around data standards for public health. So wouldn't it be great if we could actually inform that, so that legislation, similar to the 21st Century Cures Act, actually points at something tangible and says, use
yep.
that.
Yep.
Now, I think that would be useful.
That's very well said. That's what I was stumbling my way through. and perhaps they get attached to financial incentives and grants and things in the future, so that even if there's not a regulatory incentive, there can be a financial incentive to push the states forward.
David, Raj and Jack are in the queue for comments.
Okay, great. Raj, Thanks, Arian.
Great, thanks. Thanks, everybody. I wanted to switch directions a little bit and just bring up something that we've been struggling with. And I've been out of the loop a lot of this task force and the kind of deep policy pieces. So please feel free to say that this issue has been addressed is not relevant. So for the last month, we've been from MedStar Health really focused on vaccine distribution like everybody else, but targeted outreach to try and combat some of the disparities that that we're all plagued with. And as part of that process, we are having a really big challenge understanding who has already been vaccinated. And in particular, as we try and work with our HIE to know whether folks have been vaccinated or not, there's no API process. And so it is this currently, it's a very manual process of looking within each patient's record, connecting to the HIE to see whether they've been vaccinated. And the HIE is kind of a building a capability for us to do a batch process to match patients, but it's not there yet. So I'm wondering if that's a space that we should be looking at and whether others have faced similar challenges.
Can I comment? This is Les Leonard. Yeah, I know we've been focused on this as a huge issue. It's I have a paper that I can share with you on this, and that it's a great area for Flatfire. And that if you're interested, we have a Red Cap program that speaks Flatfire that you could use this with. But what's really needed is for the states to replicate their data in a interoperable platform like an IIS, that take it out of the IIS and move it to something like a FHIR clinical data repository or something where that can speak Flatfire. Because that's what you want. You want to send a list of patients
exactly
every day to the public health department and get back the ones that have been vaccinated so you can stop calling.
Exactly right. Yeah, yep, that's exactly right. So Les, I just dropped my email in the chat, so if you could share that, that'd be great. So and so from a kind of a policy perspective and our use cases, would love to see that added if others think that it's relevant to be here.
Raj, this is David. Just one clarification. Is there the data is being captured on the vaccine administration electronically at some point. It's just very hard for you to get to it. Is that the problem?
So it is correct. It is captured at some point. The challenge is we can, within MedStar Health, 10 hospital system, we can see our patients that have been vaccinated if they've been vaccinated
right
at MedStar Health. But if the patient happened to be vaccinated at Hopkins or anywhere else, we keep reaching out to them saying, hey, do you want the vaccine? And we're going through this manual cold call process, and it turns out about 20% of them have been vaccinated already. Right? Super simple HIE problem that could save us a lot of resources and time.
But it turns out that there is a query response HL7 interface where you can do it on a one-by-one basis. We can't do it on there's no standards to do it on a batch basis, but I don't even think the query response standard is well adopted at states. David, I just want to, again, acknowledge
that.
It's designed for a web-based interface that was, you know, that's often provider-specific or vendor-specific so that, you know, the vendor says, okay, send, you know, you can check the vaccine status on the your EHR if you work with me on this. So
We're querying state immunization registries across the country using 251, HL7251, for immunization status, both to supply administration information and to retrieve an individual's vaccination history, not just their single status. And then we're aggregating it into JSON and passing it up as a FHIR resource.
That's right. And the only thing that would be better than that is to have the registry there ready to respond with a FHIR-enabled database that could respond to a Flatfire query. So.
Well, it may be, but I must admit, that feels like putting a gold Cadillac into something that's working right now. We have bigger gaps than that one. And at the end of the day,
I totally disagree. It's not a gold Cadillac. It's just like a.
So let's save the details for a second pass through this, because I think we'll have to be a lot more specific if we want to recommend specific standards or specific implementations around a standard. So I'll register that this is a hot topic. I'll also register that somebody, I think maybe it was Raj, you said the phrase super simple HIE problem, and I wanted to point out that's an oxymoron. I've never met a super simple HIE problem in my life. We'll register this is a broad category of sort of vaccination status tracking across regions at a minimum and maybe even nationally. And then I think, Jack, you had your hand up, and it may be on the same topic.
Sorry, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. So I wanted to actually just I wanted to talk about three things. I wanted to quickly also do a plus one on the vaccination status part. Mentioning I don't think it's a HIV problem. And I think it's for to David Engel, because honestly, it is now an international issue. There are now multiple private entities doing vaccination passports. We have, I think, a very unique opportunity to make a standard that could potentially be global if we do it quickly and well, or we could basically have this entire thing fragment, not just globally, but basically into every county. The other two things I want to just quickly mention about priorities that I would love for us to talk about was price transparency. So the executive order has started on that side, but as you guys probably saw, it's like a mix of random Excel sheets and web pages. This is like basically nonsensical. And some way of dealing with that would be very important. And the other is also probably COVID-related, which is because of COVID, there's a lot of health equity and socioeconomic demographic data that a lot of people want to access. And that standard is complete chaos. Like it would be also good to really implement something there before that whole field fragments.
Okay, Jack, just because you were a little bit broken up there, but I want to reiterate what I heard, and others can, or you can correct me if I missed something in the choppiness. One is vaccination status, as might be communicated in a passport, a certificate that you could prove that you've been vaccinated with. And so I'll just lump that into a broad category called vaccination passports, not necessarily limited to literal passports.
We call it vaccine credentials, the ability to support for the obvious reasons.
Credentials, yes. So that's a broad category. Then number two, you said price transparency, to pick up with where we left off on that topic in the past due to the sort of not, the lack of standards there. There's policy, but not very much in the way of standards. And then the third was health equity, where you said the standards are in chaos. And I wondered if you could clarify what standard you were referring to.
Oh, sorry. I actually, what I say was work and the current data collection is in chaos. I don't think people really know what the standards are or if there are any. But because of COVID and because of the current administration, there's incredible focus right now on collecting this data and frankly doing better on disparities. And we have, an opportunity to make the right standards in the space right now.
Yeah, so sorry, let me pick up on two of those comments just to underscore what I think the request is. So on the price transparency, CMS put out a rule that requires letting out the price transparency on a patient-specific basis or a plan-specific basis from the hospital, but the standard was basically PDF or text file or other structured document, and there's no computability of the data that's being put out. So publishing a standard there would be a useful add to the information that's already being shared. And then I understood your point on the demographic and other equity issues. I remember from the standards committee that we actually have pretty well thought through demographic standards that are very thoughtful in terms of capturing granularity on a person-specific basis for social determinants of health, for racial and ethnic underrepresented status, et cetera. But that maybe you're pointing out that on the ground, we don't have any policy levers that make sure that information actually is faithfully collected. So although we may have the standards, we have sort of chaos on the ground in terms of whether it's collected, how it's collected, and whether it's collected in a way that aligns to the standard. Is that the key point?
Yeah, and I think you said it much better than I could. Thank you.
That's my superpower. I just repeat what people say and clean it up on the fly.
The advantage of taking a second shot at something is always a big advantage. I would on that topic of collecting the health equity information and social determinants of health, I would look forward to at least a little bit of discussion about the barriers to collecting that in the context of our desire to become blind to those issues. I think there's a tension there that we by collecting that information and obsessively focusing on it for good reasons, we also create an awareness of it that we're trying to move past as a society. So that's an interesting discussion, how to frame it. Maybe we can defer that till later. Maybe someone could even come and talk to us about how to think through that topic. I suspect the current administration will be very sensitive to that. Okay, anybody with their hands up right now with...
I don't see anybody with their hand up. Is there anybody who has Leslie put his hand up?
Leslie,
sure. I'll put my hand up just because I think the point about what's the performance capacity of existing IIS systems and whether we need to create an infrastructure around bulk fire for immunizations is a really important one. There's two use cases. There's obviously the COVID-19 use case, but then we've also had a whole year of children and adults who've missed vaccinations. And so so I think that the outbound message from the vaccine registry needs to be standardized. That's the link. We have a V2X message going in, but we don't have an outbound message, and while I think Flatfire would help with that, even that isn't really terribly specific for at a detail. But I'll let Andy sort of argue back with me that he has the outbound message HL7V2X specified, but I'd love to hear how he did that and what that means and those things.
Well, I've got my hand up already, Les.
We have a
251 response, so we can get that. But I agree with you on the modernization to at least a fire facade, and if not, we've also got the creation of the performant underlying IIS, because at the end of the day, there's not that much variability between the underlying IISs. You know, as we started interfacing with them, they weren't that different. I'm not sure it's the scope of this task force to start proposing IIS changes. I think we can absolutely talk about the standards that are used to interface to them, but I'm not sure we can talk about things like performance, latency, and all those good things. It's, Les, we absolutely should be talking about it, and it's something I think that HITACH should be talking about, but not necessarily this task force.
I'd agree with you there.
I'll share with you the 251 work we're doing.
Yeah, so
I see that that's a fantastic advance.
Andy, one point there is in the real world, there's about 40 of the IISs that are all done by the same vendor. So one of the reasons many states are very similar isn't because states have broadly adopted standards, but that many states have broadly adopted literally the same IIS. But anybody who says that states are relatively well modern and it's pretty easy to work with has never been to California, where we have, I think, 7 regional IISs and then some shims and hackarounds to implement standards. So just because 40 of the states are on a common, literally the same common platform, at least from a code-based perspective, doesn't mean that we've universally addressed this problem. It just means that you've probably done a lot of work that's happened to hit those 40 states that are on a common system.
No, I agree with you entirely, Arian. And it's a standardization by accident as opposed to a standardization that's been deliberately well managed from public health. And I get that. And we've got things like New York City, City of Philadelphia have their own immunization registry. San Antonio has its own, as well as San Joaquin, San Diego, and the other ones in California. I agree with you guys entirely. And I would like nothing more for my life's work now to be to fix immunizations for exactly the reason that Les was highlighting that, look, we'll work through COVID, we'll work through boosters, we'll work through variant doses, we'll get through that. But there is an entire group of in the pediatric space where vaccinations have gone to one side. And that needs to be traced, tracked, and remediated. But I don't know if we can do that in this task force.
Well, so look, I totally agree. We have to look at what would be necessary for that. And I think that there is this necessary thing about an outbound message from a public health registry to an EHR. So we can talk about this as being with an opiate overdose registry, the opiate prescription registries. It can be the vaccine registries. It can be the maybe notifiable diseases. Afferent loop away from public health is what's underspecified. The input loop is pretty well done by meaningful use.
I want to be careful about some of the conversations that everyone seems to be having, because I think we have a unique opportunity right now because of COVID for some potentially global type standard in this case. But keep in mind that like we are using pharmacies, we are using new stadiums. We are, like, on federal side, they're thinking about asking churches to give shots. Like, we are not talking about HIEs, and we're talking about a lot of places that, frankly, have no access to an EHR. So we have to be a little bit careful about
I think we lost you at the end there, but I think we captured that
really?
Comment.
You're correct in that there is a very good issue here about whether a site that's administering vaccines without an EHR or without a lightweight substitute that can generate an HL7V2X message to the registry should be in the business. That there's a lot of but I don't know whether that's a standards issue or a policy issue because somebody's deciding to give them vaccines.
Can I move that we move off this topic, because I feel like we're going deep on one area as opposed to sticking to David's approach of going broad, collecting broadly, and then going deep. So I worry a little bit that we're going down to solve this particular issue, which rather than collect hypotheses to work on for later work group meetings.
Yeah, I think we can come back to this. It is certainly a high priority for several of us. So let's not we're not going to abandon it, but let's cycle back when we've had a chance to organize our thoughts a little bit.
David, who haven't we heard from yet? Maybe we can we can do the thing of calling people out that that haven't been raising their hand. Ricky, I think you were on, but I don't think we heard from you.
Ricky's just dropped, had to drop.
Oh, he just dropped. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know.
Smart move.
I think Denise was on for a while. I don't see her here again. Who hasn't gotten a chance to speak? Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
This is Ed. I can jump in right now. I agree with what all the folks have mentioned here. I do think one of the things we can do as a committee is maybe spend a little bit of time unpacking all the complexities within the social determinants of health conversation, because I do think that there's an opportunity to get a little bit more crisp on the hypothesis and how the implementation or standards or the opportunity to change this space may or may not look. So it might warrant maybe a separate, more focused discussion, because there's a lot of great input.
And then I'm going to raise my hand as a task force member. I think I alluded to this before, but we're a country that, at least on the acute care side, has 96% penetration of electronic health records in this country, and yet, and you know, it's not that this is a national fight or national contest, but I think relative to the UK and the work that they did in the recovery, the set of recovery trials, our ability to use the electronic information that we have to inform things like relative COVID risk or natural, you know, course of history for administration of hydroxychloroquine or MABs or, you know, other kinds of therapeutics, use of steroids, use of corticosteroids, use of anticoagulant therapy, you know, our ability to take real world evidence and apply it to clinical practice was, I think, objectively lacking relative to the UK, despite what I think we could argue is an equal or potentially greater deployment of EHRs. You know, the way I summarized this in a Twitter comment was that when it comes to sponsored clinical trials, we've got a great CRO infrastructure, we've got a great PI infrastructure, and we can investigationally trial the hell out of anything we want. And I think we saw this with the adoption of MABs, or trials for MABs, certainly trials for vaccines. But when it comes to real world evidence, when it comes to you know, natural histories, when it comes to non-sponsored clinical trials or comparative effectiveness research, we're just objectively not there.
Well, Aaron, let me piggyback on that one, because I have a similar concern. I think it's an overlap, or a similar thought. I think it overlaps with yours a little bit. What struck me as an outside observer watching mostly via Twitter at the beginning of the pandemic, when it became clear that we needed to aggregate data better to generate hypotheses about what might work and what was going on and which patients were at highest risk, there seemed to be just a gigantic absence of the ability to quickly do that. So what occurred to me is I'm going to get detailed here, but I'll just take it as a for instance. You know, for instance, with the ability to that EHRs are now required to support flat fire exports, bulk fire exports, would it be possible to create a standard, maybe with OMAP or something like that, where in an urgent situation, cross vendor, cross community, people could export enough data to build databases for hypothesis generation, knowing that it's not robust clinical trial data, et cetera, but it might let you quickly ask questions about who's at most risk from this virus, which drugs have been either purposefully or accidentally used in the virus that might or might not warrant deeper investigation. So I would call it urgent hypothesis generation as one use case. Is that similar to what you're talking about, Arianne?
Yeah, I think that overlaps with real-world evidence that we want to know. We want to know the time course of disease and then see if there are, both from an exploratory perspective, if there are correlates on the time course of disease, and then more from a real-world evidence trials perspective, see if we can look at a cohort of patients who were on X or on Y, all the way up to the more recovery, sort of formal comparative effectiveness trial, where you actually look and compare at a drug or a therapy against control, but it's not a sponsored drug, and where the public health community and the medical community are effectively the sponsor. Both Rahm and Leslie have their hands up, so I just want to acknowledge that.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Rahm here.
Well, I'll just go with Rahm.
Can you hear me, Rahm?
Yes.
So there was a recent act, which is the, I presume it's called the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. And how, this is the act which I believe President Biden signed recently regarding the pandemic support. So how does, are there any things in there that requires us to look into? In terms of the coronavirus, most of it is to deal with coronavirus, but some of the things which was mentioned now, the vaccination, syndromic surveillance, and all these things are related to that. So are there any explicit kind of recommendations to ONC on that? Did the Congress ask ONC to do something on that?
I'm not aware. I think structurally, this is going to get into the deep legislative weeds, but I think structurally, what you can do through reconciliation is only appropriation, not authorization or legislation. So I think basically the way that that act was structured was that it was almost entirely around earmarking sources of funding for existing programs as opposed to creating new legislative asks. But I think it's probably a good call out back to ONC staff to see whether there's any specific call outs we need to do with regard to that bill. And then I would acknowledge that at least some members of the health committee have proposed legislation that would put in additional funding for state public health and tie that funding for standards adoption in ways I think that align with some of the conversations that we've talked about.
Thank you. Because the things that were mentioned about syndromic surveillance and vaccine credentialing, all those things kind of fit into that framework, so that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, there may be funding. So the other way of framing this is there may be funding that the U.S. federal government has to spend, and it might be worthwhile for us to make some recommendations with regard to how the programmatics for that spending work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I guess it's my turn now.
Yeah, go ahead, Les. Yeah.
Thanks. The thing I would like to raise is whether there's standards that we need development of standards for talking about facilities readiness and ability to respond to pandemic-like challenges or other disasters. That I know that there is a CDC form that is there's a de facto request that the government is making there, and that it's we're migrating back to the CDC approach, which was to have a platform at the hospital that would have manual data entry into it largely to talk about readiness. But is there a way for us to look at this, surge capacity in a hospital and the availability of critical resources like CT scanners or operating rooms or other things like that in a more systematic way, and that for an EHR to kind of publish in a systematic way the status of the facility as a whole. And it might even come down to things as crazy as allowing patients in a systematic way to know how long the wait is in the ED, or on average today how long they'd be waiting in a clinic or waiting for a pharmacy prescription versus from a more emergency response is, okay, well, how many beds in the ED are occupied? How many ICU beds are available? What is the nursing status versus availability of beds? There's a lot of detail about the status of any one given facility that needs to be surfaced in an appropriate way, and that there is a lot of manual data entry in this area currently, and there are some CDC virtual standards by dictating what they have to do, but I'm not sure all of those are rational.
I think I don't know much about something, an implementation guide called SANER, S-A-N-E-R, that I think it's based on Top of Fire. I think it may try to address some of those concerns. Is anybody aware much of what's in SANER and whether that's close to what Les was describing?
I have the same impression that you do, but I haven't followed the work closely. But we could easily pull in Scott or Keith to comment on.
Yeah, it's Keith's driving SANER, but it's around beds, COVID utilization, ventilators. That's that space.
Yeah, maybe we could get a presentation on that if it looks like that's the topic we want to pursue. It's technically already listed in the ISA, but just in bare bones yeah. form and without much clarification of exactly what it does.
And generalized to an all-hazards approach from COVID?
I can't tell you. I know it's based on fire. That's about. It's a. I think it's a query response kind of thing based on fire.
Yeah. It was specifically crafted, I think, for COVID, but it was all done by Audacious Inquiry.
So maybe we could get somebody.
Keith's the right guy. Boom.
Go ahead, Len.
Yeah, that's what I was recommending. Keith or Scott could talk to it. I think Keith is probably the person who can give us all the details.
Give us the pep talk. Okay. Let me purposefully shift away from COVID and pandemic thoughts. We have about 15 minutes left, of which we need to take 5 minutes for public input. I think Jack may have mentioned the price transparency as something worth following up, and we've had the equity discussion as worth more attention. Are there other broad areas that come to people's minds?
Equity and SDOH probably map pretty well together, so that allows us to capture health equity, social determinants, underrepresented groups, underrepresented geographies as a category, and then potentially follow the data flows, sort of capturing the point that in many cases, even when they're standards, the data aren't captured in conjunction with those standards. We should also talk about, again, this is back in the COVID public health line, but contact information. I think we saw real gaps in getting contact information, even in cases where it was collected in hospitals and in the EHR, all the way to labs and then from labs to public health.
And I will add a second bullet to the contact tracing just for our consideration. There were a number of attempts at deploying app-based contact tracing tools to allow you to detect if you had been exposed to someone. I don't think any of them had a huge amount of uptake, but that's something that could bear investigation in terms of maybe standards around privacy constraints that we felt like they should be developed to govern those tools and so forth. So, exposure tracing, I guess, is a better way than, say, contact tracing. Put that on. And then on the equity thing, I would also add to a bullet point to that one, Arian. I think maybe you didn't mention it, about access to data. This came up in the high-tech meeting. It's one thing to put something out on a smartphone, but if you don't have a smartphone, you can't get it. Should there be minimum standards for access, such as saying a web browser must be browser-based access must be provided and so forth?
Yeah, I think it also lines up. The thought I had when we were having that conversation at HITECH was, how do I take the same API-based access that we provide directly to individuals through their smartphones and allow that to also be used for delegates and extenders? So in the case, for example, of a call center where somebody's wanting to schedule on behalf of a person, how do we enable delegated access so that we can take the same information in multiple modes and multiple modalities? And in ways that are more easily consumable by a wider range of patients and aren't just hardwired into portals that have some inherent access issues.
That's another bullet point. Other suggestions broadly?
Just wanted to comment on the EN things. I think it's a great idea that it goes with the digital passports for verification for vaccination. Is this verification of exposure or non-exposure using this is the opposite side of that, along with combining that with test results.
You used a phrase at the beginning of your sentence there that I missed, and the transcriptionist missed it. You said EM?
EN, exposure notification.
Oh, okay, EN. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, that
David, Jim Jurgis has rejoined. A quick question. Again, I'm not familiar enough to know if this would be in scope or not, but if we're talking about where to focus, I know that in part the public health, the issue of promoting interoperability, not really leading, not really yielding the kind of progress we wanted with.
Jim, you're breaking up. Try again. Jim? Well,
hopefully we can collect Jim's commentary either via email or on the next meeting.
Yeah, and that's true. Obviously, for any of you, please email either or both of us if you have thoughts that occur after the meeting. We'll bring them forward in the next meeting to discuss.
And if you can hear us and you're having trouble connecting, just hold off a little bit and we'll try to get your information in later. David, it occurs to me if we look at our future focus areas, we've addressed SDOH, we've addressed cost transparency, at least in the what would it look like to clean up the existing requirements for hospitals. We haven't addressed chronic care management, and I wonder whether chronic care management, burden of disease, ongoing case management is an area that this group would want to, you know, potentially add in the context of going wide. The topics that have typically gone to this area is how do we expose a plan of care in a computable way that is multi-stakeholder accessible. And then, you know, the other category that tends to go into this area is, are there other data that need to be standardized, for example, dietary recommendations, and then the category of patient reported outcomes, and I forget the acronym here, but, you know, basically patient reported data. On in particular standards for wired glucometers, for blood pressure monitoring, other kinds of remote patient monitoring or remote patient data collection that is easily computable and sent to caregivers, nurses, other folks who are helping the patient manage plan of care.
Important areas.
Les has had his hand up, dropped it, put it back up.
I'm sorry, I'm just having trouble with the interface. I'd say that, again, this is an interesting issue where there's one standard for how you identify a person to a device, and then another for how the device gets identified back to to whatever authentication structure is accepting the data from it. So that a lot of this is very poorly specified right now and is definitely a Wild West type of arena where you have people standardizing based on the, you know, sort of a proprietary stack in and out of the ED, EHR, rather than, you know, being able to allow any device to work back with any EHR.
Is this the space of OAuth and standards like that? Is that the kind of handshaking you're talking about between devices?
No, I think it's more like, in my world, it's been issuing a unique encrypted ID to a smartphone so that you can, so the smartphone can send back medical data that it collected from a device to an electronic health record and have it integrated automatically.
Well, you could certainly use OAuth for that, but there may be better standards.
There might be better standards for that or easier to use standards. I think that what there probably is a standard way to do this. Could could be any standard you wanted to do it, but
agreed to do it.
Perennial UDI, which has been an ongoing topic from the standards committee on, I think, for the last 10 years, which is, you're talking about different devices, but you know, when we talk about, for example, continuous glucometer, how do we actually identify that device and track that device information? We've had a UDI standard since forever, but that data is not currently flowing.
And then there's the linkage between the device and the person, even though the device might be technically used by several people.
Very hard. Did we open for public comment, Arian?
I think we're supposed to do that in 2 minutes. So we could stall and tap dance for 2 minutes and then open for public comment and close the call. You know, I think we did our job of going broad. It might be worthwhile for the next meeting to start to consolidate some of this, come up with a punch list of items that we discussed, survey the group to see if there's anything obvious that we missed, and then start the work on next meeting of after we've tried to go broad, then start to go narrow. And I think also, David, I think you and I might want to put together a framework for how we think about recommendations just based on the conversation we had prior to this meeting of how do we think about the time course of recommendations? How do we think about the centrality or leverageability of certain recommendations? How do we think about policy coordination that requires ONC to publish more recommendations versus requiring administrative agreement versus requiring literal acts of Congress versus requiring literal acts of Congress and states to coordinate? Each of those have different policy requirements. So we might want to put together a framework for how we think about recommendations in this area as a potential next step. So I just want to, you know, see if from the group whether that approach makes sense before we get a public comment. Hearing no other comment, I think we've successfully stalled for time and are now available to open for public comment.
Thank you. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments.
Thanks, operator. And while we're waiting, I just wanted to mention to everyone while we have a few seconds is that our next call for the task force will be next Thursday on March 18th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So anyways, thank you for joining us today. Operator, we have any comments?
There are no comments at this time.
Thank you.
Should we just give people back 4 additional minutes in their day?
Generous of you.
It's our gift to you.
I'm seeing people vote with their feet already, just looking at the participants in the chat.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody, for great suggestions. We'll try to pull them into some kind of an organization and go at it again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, all.